You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another awesome episode of Ask Drone You. As our remote ID series continues, as you know, it's really important for people to understand how remote ID is really going to affect them personally, and then understand how we can fight that to make a better industry as a whole. So today, because New Mexico, where DroneU headquarters is located, is kind of the new Bollywood. It's the small Hollywood that has really come to fruition in about the last decade. And because of that, a lot of people in the film industry are starting to ask questions now. How will remote ID affect their industry? Well, we have someone very special here today. He's known for filming car commercials, Ford commercials, music videos, movies, and TV shows alike. He also has a bar degree, but decides not to use it because, well, those aren't his people. It's so much behind the curtain of one of our dear friends, Mr. Kenji Sugihara. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you, Paul. I need to use my radio voice because I need to sound like you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Are you laughing so hard because you hear me so much in normal life and you're like, who is this guy?
Who's this guy? No. Well, this is totally cool. I'm stoked to be on the show to be able to talk about movies and remote ID and just totally nerd out on it with you.
Awesome.
It's gotta be you, though. It's only you.
Well, yeah, right. I appreciate that. But look, Kenji, you are one of the few people in the drone industry that is really, really taking a lot of time and a lot of effort to make sure that this fight is unified, that drone pilots come together rather than dividing each other to really make a difference. And I was watching your YouTube video with Bobby Watts, the Watts Innovation drone manufacturer out of Baltimore. And, you know, he was mentioning all of the work that you do with Netflix and Universal, all these different studios. And I thought there was really no better person, since you're dealing with this on a weekly basis, but you're also a part of these high-level groups in the FAA, and you're a part of the real fight, and you're doing this without any financial benefit whatsoever. So how are you not a great person to talk about how remote ID is going to affect the film industry? So I think you're the right person to nerd out, my friend.
Thank you, my kind friend. And the reason I sort of got into the regulatory policy side was because when I worked with the Oregon legislature, I was like, wait a second, they're coming up with laws and regulations that about what I do. How do I get on the end of just helping feed them information and educating folks so the output is better for us? So it's really in my own self-interest, but it morphed into something like, Let's figure out how to make it work for us so we don't get so regulated we're put out of work or put out of business.
Yeah, and I feel I'm afraid that we're right here as far as I feel like we're finally here as far as this industry being over-regulated. And because the proposed remote ID rules were so complex, you have a very lackluster response from really some of the most important and highest paying drone jobs in the industry, like, you know, being on set and flying these heavy lifters. And so let's just break right into it, Kenji. I know you've been flying for a long time. I know you've been in this fight and you've been a part of the Oregon legislature. Really, really simply, the way that remote ID is proposed right now, how is that going to transform how drone operations take place on set?
So there's one issue that I want to bring up first, which was actually brought up in a Drone You sort of the in our group, a little line that said, how about flights indoors? And I was like, that's going to be an issue because the way the NPRM is written, any drone sold in the United States will need to be compliant with remote ID. And the issue is when you're inside a building, guess what? There's no GPS. And if you're forced to buy a remote ID compliant drone, it won't take off unless you're broadcasting the correct info, right? And indoors, guess what? There's no GPS. So you can't broadcast your actual location. So it won't take off, which is a huge problem because it's regulating something that's not in the NAS.
Well, I was just going to say flying indoors is not the jurisdiction of the FAA. Is that right?
Yeah. And you can't. So in essence, you can't buy a drone that can fly indoors, right?
Huh. That's
Let me give you one more example. Around a week ago, I was flying for a car manufacturer, and I was flying between these really tall trees, like, which is common. They love seeing the low of the ground and all that stuff. But guess what? There's no GPS. So even though I was in the NAS, and even though I was flying under 107 perfectly fine, we had ITC, the whole road was shut down. Guess what? There's no GPS. So if there's broadcast, there's going to be broadcasting the location data, so I'd be out of compliance. So that caused major issues, whether you're flying in canyons or anything like that. And that will actually impact how we make commercials and movies, because in a lot of areas, there might not be enough GPS. And there's sometimes we're in downtown areas where there's an urban canyon. And like, for example, NASA's just started sort of researching GPS and cellular connectivity within these urban canyons. So there are a lot of issues in that too, just being able to fly.
Yeah, no, and I kind of want to take a step back because I think I did a really bad job of just kind of wrapping up what is, you know, remote ID, and then you brought in the connectivity. So just for everyone out there, if you are in the film industry, oh, sorry.
So just a refresher, like a 30,000 foot view of, so remote ID is like a digital license plate for drones. And there's two ways of doing that. There is broadcast, which is signal sent out from your drone going, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, with no infrastructure on the other side that's listening, so to speak. And that can usually be done through broadcast, Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, or as the FAA really wanted to do it, anything that's compatible with a handheld mobile device, like a cell phone in essence. Now, there's a secondary way to do remote ID, which is contemplated, which is called network. And what that means is either the drone or your ground control station, which is like your controller, connects to the internet and connects to a what's called a remote ID service supplier.
So let me make sure I got this right. Let me just interrupt you really quick. So remote ID is supposed to be the license plate system in the sky. But there are really two fundamental ways to work inside of this: standard and limited remote ID. Standard requires internet connectivity, which is a complete issue in itself, and we're going to dig into that. But if I also understand it, this license plate in the sky, to help everyone understand, imagine if your car had to be connected to the internet at all times, even to turn it on, even to do diagnostics. And what if you had to pay a monthly fee to run that service on your car? So your car is always connected to the internet, and if it can't, it can't drive. And, well, here's the thing. Your license plate has a level of privacy, right? If I cut Kenji off, because I drive EcoBoost and he doesn't, Kenji can't figure out.
My record car is faster than your car.
Okay, let's say Kenji cuts me off. All right, Kenji cuts me off.
No. You're the jerk. You're the one who's going to be cutting me off.
Okay, I'm cutting Kenji off. I'm cutting Kenji off. All right, and Kenji sees my license plate, but Kenji cannot figure out where I live. Kenji cannot go to my home and spray paint it. He can't leave cow dung out front of the garage. He doesn't know where I live. It's a level of privacy. But with the proposed remote ID rules, everyone would have access to this information. So if I'm Netflix and I'm flying
not quite. Your personally identifiable information is actually protected. So it's your regular Joe off the street won't be able to say, oh, I live here. But they will be able to figure out where the takeoff location is or where your ground control station is.
Yes. And while I understand what you're saying as far as personally identification information, for me, just the fact that if I'm flying for, let's say, again, and I should probably not use this word, but, you know, the Netflix, let's say I'm flying for Netflix. Let's say I'm flying for Universal. If under this system, if I were to take off, anyone could see that we were flying where we are, where that production is. They may not see my personal name, but they're going to see where I personally, the pilot, am flying from, not necessarily the drone, which is one of the big issues, you know, that we have with remote ID. But, you know, going back to the whole license plate system, you know, we talked about remote ID is essentially supposed to be license plate in the sky. I gave the example of drivers and why internet connectivity would cause such fervor for the American public if that were to be imposed on drivers. So how is the FAA getting away with imposing it on drone pilots?
Because they are. And it's up to us to actually sort of come back and say, hey, no, this is sort of a little bit too much. We've discussed this in the past. There might be ways to possibly encrypt the pilot location insofar that only the authorized law enforcement could look it up. So that is a potential. And when people watch this and start commenting, they should include that as say, hey, we think it's important that we're able to sort of mask to the general public, at least, the takeoff location. Because for a lot of productions, it's so important that we keep what we're doing private. You know how the running joke goes. Somebody comes up to you if you're on set or whatever. What are you filming? A mayonnaise commercial. We do that because we don't want to let people know exactly what we're filming. So just to be able to sort of keep our productions private, I think it's critical that we mask the location of the pilot, because you never know. Like in the city of Portland, rumor gets out, there's a big movie in town or whatever, and they're probably going to use drones. And guess what? There's a drone. And they can, with the location information, they can come find you and sort of get in with or cause problems for the production. So those are just some of the considerations that we need to think about as sort of filmmakers and movie makers that we want to preserve the privacy of what we do.
So just to make it clear for everyone watching, if under the two forms of proposed remote ID, standard and limited, let's say I'm out on set and I want to take off. What if I don't have internet connectivity?
So under a standard sort of scenario, you can take off. You just need to broadcast. If there's a network available, then you have to connect to what's called a remote ID USS, which is it's a service supplier for remote ID in essence.
Yeah. And you know what? That brings up a whole nother issue, because I really wanted to write an email to really the drone industry as a whole. And in this email, I wanted to say, how can we expect the FAA to manage remote ID data or select private suppliers to manage that data when I sent you this email with the data that was leaked from the IPP email address a year and a half ago from the FAA? Yeah. I think that would actually put it all into context really quickly. You know, how can we trust them with this data? And also, what I really don't understand is, you know, the American government seems to be so worried about drone security and data essentially being leaked to the Chinese, right? And the very simple form of stopping that is, well, no connectivity to the drone at all over the internet. So it can't send that information. And yet here we are, and the FAA's like, let's connect all the drones to the internet.
It drives you bananas, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I think people are seeing that I'm losing my mind.
We already knew that, so nothing to do. The other big concern is for a lot of the heavy lifts. So we're talking about the free flies. We're talking about the Watts innovations. A lot of us have significant investment in them. And the critical key, some of them might not be able to retrofit because, for example, the ground control stations on like the Altas are often TFGs, which don't have any internet connectivity built into them. So how, or GPS built into them. How are you supposed to make a compliant sort of ground control station? I mean, somebody could develop that, but that's additional costs to sort of the remote pilot or the company that deals with these. The other thing too is that they don't want a drone to take off unless the flight controller knows that remote ID is active. Now, if it's a dongle, how do you attach it to make sure that the drone can't take off and it's tamper resistant or tamper proof? That's very difficult.
Well, let's take this one step further. What happens if there's some sort of communication error between the flight controller and this dongle or this retrofitted solution for the internet? I'm sorry, but as we have learned from the MCAS system on the 737 MAX, I don't want any electronic thing able to inhibit motor speed. Does that make sense? Like, I don't want a glitch in the internet to all of a sudden stop my motors and now I'm dropping at terminal velocity.
Yeah. So there's a lot of considerations in it, and I think the potential expense, because while like a lot of the units that are out there, like Inspire 2s, a lot of the DJI products can potentially be retrofitted, and that can be done through a firmware update. But there is an issue, for example, of a ground control station that has to give sort of the barometric altitude. So the if you use a cell phone, some of them have sort of can read barometric pressure to get that pressure altitude, but a lot don't. So does that mean you need to buy a new phone that's compliant? There's also the issue of the controllers, again, like the TFG, that don't have that capability. And for myself, at least, I use the Crystal Sky, and that doesn't have sort of any cellular connectivity built into it. So does that mean I need to make a hotspot with my cell phone, which works very poorly because I've had to do that to unlock some of my DJI products, but that's outside the scope of this. So there's an increase in complexity that makes it's such a pain in the rear that I'm thinking that compliance rate's going to be pretty low.
If the proposed rules go through as is.
If the proposed rules go through as is. There's one other thing that I want to mention. There's another way for a remote ID to actually work, which is classified sort of under the network side. And that's what the Kitty Hawk CEO brought up. And we had been discussing that in the ARC, is volume-based notifications. So that means it's like Lance. You say, I'm going to be flying here at this time. And that pretty much should satisfy the security folks, because they're saying, hi, I'm compliant. I'm going to be here at this time. You can find me here. And unfortunately, NPR just brushes it off because they're saying, oh, yeah, but we want to eventually get to UTM and doesn't satisfy the safety consideration. But that's like, come on, you guys. It does, because frankly, we're letting you know where we are.
Yeah, seriously. We just did a show with Dave Messina, and I know you're familiar with Dave and FPVFC, and he mentioned the same thing as far as hobby flights are concerned, utilizing a notification-based system like Lance, where you say, hey, I'm here, and kind of making all of uncontrolled airspace Lance as well. And he also mentioned, he's like, for the beyond visual line of sight flights, he's like, I don't understand why we need network connectivity either. It should be, you know, broadcast. And just for everyone to understand, DJI has been building this broadcast remote ID into their drones for at least the last 2 years. So when Elaine Chao foolishly says that we have no way to see these drones, how does she expect anyone to believe what she's saying when, you know, 80% of all consumer drones are broadcasting remote ID right now? There are systems at most airports to see them. And it just kind of made me lose credibility for the lady. And that said, in wrapping this up really quick before we move forward, with proposed remote ID as is, the film industry is, one, going to have to be connected most of the time to the internet, which poses security problems, privacy problems, and problems that are unique to being on set. In addition, the equipment that you are using, which, guys, we're not talking about $5,000 drones. We're talking about $50,000 drones. And for those drones to not be able to be even commercially viable anymore, I think is going to make it's going to make it hard to find some good drone pilots in the film business. But also, so we talked about internet connectivity. We're talking about Lance here. Remote ID, broadcast only, seems to solve a lot of these problems very simply, if I understand it correctly.
Yeah, Europe's that's the way Europe's gone. That's the way France went. It makes sense. It's easy. And the fundamentally, what I think has happened is there's an attempt at cost shifting. So with broadcast, there could be infrastructure set up to put listening devices all over the place. And that could be built to smart city technology like light poles or whatever. But instead, they put the onus on us to connect to the network. So it's like the difference between the police setting up license plate readers and saying, okay, if they can deploy those and do whatever with them, to forcing us to connect to the network. So you get where I'm going? It's like, it's a cost shifting. And I don't think that's fair to us remote pilots. The other thing that I wanted to mention about sort of making it hard to find remote pilots, it's going to be such a pain in the rear to actually fly, home build, you name it, do whatever. It's going to create hurdles, especially for STEM education that brings up kids that are into technology and flying drones, getting kids into aviation, which then in turn leads to folks actually flying and doing it as a job and offering their services to our film industry.
Yeah, and you know, it's really troubling to me because if most schools are not inside of a FRIA, then how are all these kids going to fly their STEM drones? And you have kids, right, Kenji?
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. How old are your kids?
7 and 10.
7 and 10. Your kids watch you fly, right? And they think it's cool, right?
Yeah, they actually fly drones too.
That's awesome. So what if we lived in a world where wow, okay. Gotta come. Bring him to the race course. Let's do this thing. Let's do it. But okay, so let's say that your kids haven't flown, hypothetically, okay? And let's say that hypothetically, remote ID went through as proposed. And there wasn't a FRIA within, let's say, 50 to 100 miles of you. How would you feel not able to allow your kids to fly?
That would suck. You know, they love watching me fly, and it'd be pretty disappointing. I think it's a real shame, especially for I live in a pretty sort of suburban area, so I have good coverage, whatever. But my big concern is for the kids who have been left behind in the rural areas who really want to get into this activity. They're often still on dial-up. So to connect to the network just becomes a hassle. Can you imagine having to use their dial-up to actually to comply?
No, and most of the drone jobs that I do outside of DroneU are in these areas that you're talking about. And the thing, too, that I think is so powerful about drones, and especially for kids in those rural areas, is they can take on a cool job that also services their community and makes it better for everyone overall. I mean, isn't that a win-win-win-win-win? FAA is like,
yes.
Nope.
No, it's the but I'm also specifically talking about the limited drones too, because those are the ones that are more inexpensive, and that's what they learn on. So that's the absolute critical piece, because those are the entry level drones that get kids into drones themselves.
Yeah, and to hurt kids' ability to learn and experience flight. I mean, aren't kids really the funnel into the next drone pilots?
Exactly. The one thing I want to note to you is I think the FAA is definitely not the enemy in this sense. They're partners we want to work with, and the issue is it's the security agencies, specifically Homeland Security, that is coming in like an 800-pound gorilla, which I think is unfair. And to be honest, I wish they had been involved with us in the aviation rulemaking committee on a more active basis. So we could have taken their feedback and said, hey, okay, let's figure out a compromise and let's figure out something that works for all the parties instead of coming in afterwards and saying, no, this is the way it's going to be because we need a persistent and pervasive method to surveil all drone users.
Yeah, and let's break all privacy and maybe some children's security laws and potentially open up a completely new world of data that could be hacked and really showcase numerous issues. But Kenji, I think if you've been following up on a lot of the shows that I've been doing recently in the last few weeks, I think you and the audience would understand that here at DroneU, we understand that the FAA is really caught between a rock and a hard place. I mean, especially if you think about the ARC recommendations, like you mentioned, that were very common sense and that really provided a meaningful path forward. And for that to be ignored, and for a lot of the language that was utilized in the NPRM proposal, I mean, you didn't really see a lot of risk-based performance language, which is what we're used to hearing from the FAA. And I think that that is the devil in the detail that showcases that this proposal really did, as you said, come down from the security agencies. But I also think that brings up another extremely important fact, especially for those of you in the movie industry that are watching this. The way that you fight this remote ID is by commenting on the NPRM. Why? Well, these comments add fuel to the fire to help the FAA say, look, these proposed rules are so bad that everyone in the industry is just saying, not going to comply. And we have to bridge the gap between the government agencies and the real DSPs, the real pilots that are out there practically flying. And, you know, I hear what you're saying. The FAA is not the enemy. And I agree with that. And I think these comments actually help the FAA create a more common sense approach. But I don't think a lot of people understand how many jobs are going to just literally disappear if these rules were to come into place, which almost forces a non-compliance. When you have people whose livelihoods, like yours and mine, run off of aircraft in the sky. So, I mean, as far as you personally, you spend a lot of time, you've built a lot of relationships in the film industry. If you had a soapbox to sit on or a unicorn to stand next to, what would you say to him?
Get involved. Make comments. It's critical. Make those comments personal and just say, hey, these are going to affect me in these certain ways. And here are some suggestions. One of the suggestions that is really, really great was that volume based sort of notification piece that we had considered that for so long. And I wish the FAA had taken it, but they didn't. But the critical piece is tell your own story. Tell it from the perspective of, not from the perspective of the FAA, you're bad, 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 but here's how we can improve things to make things better for all of us. And DroneU has come out with a great guide in terms of how to do that. So definitely check that out.
And thank you for being a part of that, of building that guide, Kenji, because you're one of the people in this secret group I call the DSPA that is really, you know, fighting this on the back end because of the bifurcation in the industry, the lack of organization. But as Dave Messina jokingly said in the last show, the FAA did something very good. They united the industry in a way they never thought that they would.
Yeah. And now we're united, but we need to make sure that we're aligned. So we're not pointing fingers at each other or the hobbyists. It's all the hobbyists' fault. No, it's the traditionalists. No. We just need straight on alignment.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And you make a really good point. And everyone, if you want to go out and you want to learn about how to maximize your comments, telling a personal story, like Kenji just said, how is this going to affect you? Showcase a story. If I'm out at a old Western town and I don't have internet connectivity, I'm not really sure how I'm going to be able to fly, let alone spend another $100,000 to retrofit my aircraft just to work. And no, there are no exemptions for it. So I think what we need to do is we need to understand that by helping one, we help all. We help the kids, the hobbyists, the FPV racers, the RC modelers, the commercial guys, and guys like you that are at the tip of the tip of the spear, and industrial and enterprise users. I think those people who are working in secure areas those drone jobs are just simply going to go away. I really don't see how that is even going to happen. So before the industry gets hit with this bullet, before the cost of movie productions goes up by another 10%, maybe not that much, maybe like 2 or 3%, but still, it really is going to, you know, lengthen the time to do a production. There's going to be a lot more work, and a lot of areas that we're used to flying are not going to be flyable. So at what point do we stand up? Do we fight for the right to fly, but we fight for the right to tell a story in the way that we want to? Is this America, or is this some communist country where we're told when we can't go out to eat dinner? I like the hairy eyebrow, and I like the unicorn.
Oh, you're too funny. But like I said, the concrete things, for example, I mentioned flying between trees. That's an actual use case that happens all the time. And the last shot that I did, we were using the drone like an arm card, and we did it, nailed it perfectly. But can we still do that anymore under the proposed rules? No, because we'd be out of compliance. And it's the same thing with flying indoors. Can we do it under the current rules? Because we won't be able to buy drones that fly indoors, because guess what? They can't be sold. So the issue then becomes, the FAA perhaps should move back toward a dynamic where they say, hey, here are some performance-based standards if you're going to participate in the NAS. It's not like you can't sell it. It's like only if you fly it do you need to comply. And I think that's where the FAA missed the boat on this one.
Totally, totally agreed.
And regulating stuff indoors, that's out of scope, beyond the power. So that's why I make that recommendation.
Definitely. It seems like the internet connectivity, the fact that our drones now that we fly would not be in compliance, and there's really no way to retrofit them that would work. So we're having to buy all new drones the next couple years. We're looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars of costs if we have a decent fleet like you. And you know what, though? I'm not even sure that the perfect trifecta of the security issues, the privacy issues, the connectivity issues, and it's even more than the trifecta with the manufacturing requirements, the ANSI standards, the fact that all these drones have to have parts from one particular entity. All of these issues make me wonder, are film jobs still going to exist if remote ID goes through as passed? The reason I ask that question is I think you and I are both familiar with a few different procurement systems, and I think you and I are both familiar about how strict those procurement systems are when working with these larger studios. And I think you and I both know that if there is no way to comply legally within these flight systems, how are the big studios and the insurance agencies and the lawyers even going to sign off on your ability to fly if you're not compliant? Because if you're not FAA compliant, then the insurance isn't going to cover you in the wake of damages. Then they're going after the studio. I mean, you see how this ripples?
Dude, they'll just like mic drop.
I mean, you got to be
true. You know, you're preaching to the choir. I think the biggest thing is, of course, the idea that it's, yeah, I mean, exactly as you said.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand how many jobs will just be cut from this industry if this goes into place as proposed.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it shouldn't be thrown out completely. I think it should be definitely improved upon. And there's ways to do that. I think there's a lot of people that are talking about good solutions that we should all be listening to and saying, hey, this is actually a great idea, because it's going to be less of an impact on us, and it's reasonable. And I think that's fundamentally the most important thing that we have to do is that we have to be, as participants in the system, to be reasonable. It's the idea that no remote ID, no matter what, is not going to hold water and it's not going to be successful. It just won't. So we just need to use common sense, think about things, and offer suggestions.
I could not agree more, my friend. I could not agree more. Let me ask you this last question. What does the perfect world of remote ID look like in your eyes?
The perfect remote ID is the minimum amount that can satisfy the security requirements, the minimum security requirements. I mean, we do not need Fort Knox to protect like the simplest, smallest thing. We don't have a huge amount of gold, you know. We got to figure out what's reasonable. So broadcast is a great foundation. And when we get into sort of controlled airspace or where there's potential for conflict with manned aircraft or larger aircraft, then maybe network is important. And the other thing too is if we're doing advanced operations beyond visual line of sight, that makes sense to be connected to a network. But for most basic 107 operations, broadcast is good enough. And that's what the ARC recommended. It was either broadcast or network would satisfy that requirement. And the sort of local police departments and the state level police departments were in agreement. That was consensus decision. But yeah, coming back with you have to do both, I think it was a little bit of overreach. The big thing is just having context-appropriate remote ID solutions. And that's what we came up with in the ARC. And that's why we should be considering those volume-based sort of notifications. So it's just thinking through things and giving common sense to any sort of rule.
Yeah, I could not agree more, Kenji. Well, thank you for your time today, sir. Greatly appreciate it. And I greatly appreciate how you are telling the story of how this affects the industry, and your vertical specifically. And I appreciate your solution. I would say, I hear you about the Lance. I think uncontrolled airspace should be uncontrolled airspace. And you know, the whole KH proposal, I really didn't like the segregation of airspace because it's easily argued the role that they've played throughout the progression of this over the years. And a lot of companies have walked back some of the things that they've said because they realize, wow, this isn't really being received very well. So, you know, as a purist myself, as you know, I'm a little bit more harsh on some of these companies because it's very easy to tell where the motivations lie based off of how they are representing their company in regards to remote ID. And I mean, if you just follow the money, the remote ID as proposed, who does it help? Well, it helps drone delivery, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, no, the telecoms.
Yeah, that's what this is all about. So even now I'm like regretting the days of promoting certain other Lance companies. Man, we are surrounded by companies with less than solid intentions. And it's really troubling in this industry, but I'm very grateful that a lot of groups like AOPA, EAA, the Drone Alliance and us and FPVFC, these groups are finally coming together. They're organizing and they're fighting. And that's why we did this show, because we want to put it in terms that are personal to the film industry, because like you said, we have to be in alignment as well.
Yes.
So
yes, 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 yes.
Well, Kenji, thank you so much. I never thought I would actually meet an armchair lawyer, but hey, there's always a new day.
There's the chair, there's arms, there's a unicorn in the back. I'm set.
Oh, Kenji, well, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today and greatly appreciate having you on the show. Shameless plug, if people want to learn more about you, where should they go?
ACAMAerials.com. We're on Instagram, Instagram/ACAMAerials, spelled ACAMAERIALS. And we're just about to release our newest 2020 reel. So watch out for that.
Very excited for that. Very excited for that. Well, Kenji, thank you again. And thank you everyone for listening into the show. Definitely appreciate you sharing or liking the show wherever you listen, whether it's Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get the show. Please don't forget to leave us a review, as it helps other people find the show. That's going to do it for us today. Thank you again so much for watching. This is another episode of Ask Drone U.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.